ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
We've got some work to do, no doubt, but one thing that we won't be changing is our blueprint. We'll stay true to that, and we'll stay tight as a team, and as we have done in the past when we've lost games. We'll keep moving forward and make sure that confidence levels when we hit the next game are as high as possible.
England coach Brendan McCullum. I doubt you missed the cricket over the weekend. The English implosion, the Mitchell Stark heroics, the Travis Head fireworks. My days. The reaction to the tourist capitulation has been brutal, and it's been brutal from the English side of the aisle. Legends like Geoffrey Boycott and Michael Vaughan among those, savaging the baz-ball ethos and execution. That noise has been met with defiance from McCullum and Captain Ben Stokes. Should we be surprised by that? What next for England? And how will Head's opening explosion shape the home side? Selectors have a surprise headache. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. ABC cricket writer Dean Bilton spent a chaotic weekend in Perth covering a bonkers first test. Dean, how deep have the recriminations been for England in the wake of an astonishing, mind-melting two-day defeat?
I think they're just starting to get their heads around what's happened over in the UK. I think it happened too fast for everyone.
Stark moves in, bowls. He's played on! Root is out, he's bowled by Stark. He's dragged the ball into his stumps. This is a collapse now that has done more than just open the game up. It's really brought Australia back into it.
And now they've come out the other side, and I think they're starting to rub their eyes and kind of see this team and this series and what might be about to happen to them pretty clearly for what it is. So the recriminations were led, I think, in the papers by Geoffrey Boycott, who's obviously a very respected voice in English cricket, and he's basically said he's fed up with this team, watching them lose games like this, watching them play like that. Michael Vaughan was pretty tough as well over here.
Generally feel this England side, when you look down at it from 1 to 11 with the depth in the squad, they've got enough tools here to be really competitive. But you can't be competitive without brains. You can't just play one way, and they've just tried to play this one way, and today they've come unstuck. They came unstuck yesterday.
The thing for me is the recriminations are outside the England cricket team. I'm not sure inside they're going to be particularly bothered by anything that's really happened here. I don't know whether that's a strength or a weakness of this Stokes and McCullum baz-ball era, that they're so unaffected by results. But I think they're going to turn up to Brisbane the exact same way they turned up to Perth. And, you know, they make a point of not caring about the recriminations. The only point that they're going to care about recriminations is when someone loses their job. And I think if it carries on down this track all the way through these Ashes, which, you know, McCullum and co have circled as this is the series that this entire thing that they've built over the last few years has been built for. If it gets to the end of this series and it continues to look like Perth, McCullum's position is going to be the one that's in jeopardy.
It was really interesting to see ABC, BBC broadcaster Jonathan Agnew speaking to both Stokes and McCullum, and exactly what you sort of painted there, the sort of hallmark of this team's mentality. We've heard people speak about them being at times resembling a cult, that sort of ongoing belief and commitment to the bit.
What won't be changing is our blueprint. We believe in what we're doing. We believe in the style that we've set over the last couple of years and the players that we've got. And we'll see where we land.
Should we really be surprised that Stokes and McCullum are backing it in, given we've seen a version of this belief from them previously?
Yeah, not at all. I think they've laid their cards so clearly on the table for as long as McCullum and Stokes have been in charge of the team. You know, there's such a fine line between, you know, confidence and dogmatic belief and then stubbornness. And this team falls on the wrong side of that line pretty regularly. I mean, they've lost test matches that they never should have lost, but they offset that by saying, well, we've won a few that we never should have won. And they're turning every test match into a coin flip. And that's basically what Perth was. That two-day test match was going to be decided by one batter, effectively. And it was going to be, you know, if Harry Brook got in for a couple of hours, England were going to win the test. If Travis Head got in for a couple of hours, Australia was going to win the test. England seem happy with that. They seem happy to go in, you know, with such little control. They're happy to let madness reign. And I look back at the team that won over here in 2010-11. They beat Australia by getting themselves into positions where they have an opportunity and then just grinding Australia down. And Alistair Cook and Jonathan Trott and KP and all of those blokes batted for days and days and days, and they took a weak and inexperienced Australian bowling attack, not overly unlike the one that's fronted up in this test, and they just ground them down and did not give them a sniff, and then they dominated the series after doing that early in the series. So that's the concern for the opportunity that they've let slip in this test is, you know, they turned up on day two with the opportunity to do exactly that. And just imagine how much damage they could have done to the Australian bowling attack physically. Like, Nathan Lyon didn't bowl because he was hurt. You know, Mitchell Starc is 35, 36 years old, carrying the bowling attack. Scotty Boland lifted. Josh Hazlewood, I'm sure we'll talk more about him later. Pat Cummins, both of them not playing. There was an opportunity there to bat Australia not only out of the test, but maybe out of the series. They could have done so much damage, but that's not the way they play. The way they play is Harry Brooks sees one back of a length, 2 foot outside off stump, third ball. He's going to have a waft at it. And if he nicks it, he nicks it. Oh, well. If he hits it for four, then good job, Harry.
Boland comes in and he's forward to this edging and he's caught. He's out for a duck.
That's the way they played in Perth. It's the way they're going to play in Brisbane. It might work there and they might look like heroes, but I just feel like it's leaving the door ajar for opponents, and especially a team like this Australian side in Australia. I can't imagine it's going to work more often than it doesn't.
A 12-day gap between test matches, and the next flashpoint of this conversation is how they might prepare for that Brisbane test, a pink ball fixture. England almost never play day-night test cricket, except against Australia. So you want the preparation, theoretically. They have the option of playing a game in Canberra, which is an England Lions fixture. They can parachute players into that, taking on a PM's 11. Stokes and McCullum seem reticent to do it.
We prepare incredibly well. We work incredibly hard every single day that we get the opportunity to work on our game. And that's what we'll keep on doing because we believe and we trust in our process.
Why would they not want the prep?
I can only assume that the only reason that they would not retrofit this schedule to get some players playing in that game is because they would see it as some sort of admission of defeat of their methods. They are that desperate to stick to everything that they believe in and to outwardly portray that they are sticking to everything that they believe in, that they are doing harm to their chances in the second test by sticking to it.
All we try and do is give ourselves the best chance of how we believe we think we can win an Ashes series or a test series. We'll let the dust settle on this tonight, and over the next couple of days we'll work out whether guys going and playing in that game is the right thing, or whether keeping the team tight and making sure morale doesn't drop is the alternative. So we'll work on that and we'll come up with a plan.
They've got these 3 extra days off. I'm not sure what they're going to get up to. They'll probably play some golf. That's what they seem to enjoy doing. Take in the sights of Perth, come over to Brisbane a little bit early, get used to the heat, which is out of control. But they're not going to play this pink ball test, which is the one thing that would give them, you know, even if it's a 5% better chance in Brisbane in this second test with the series on the line for them already. I can't fathom why you wouldn't do that, but maybe that's just us looking at cricket through an outdated lens and these guys have got it figured out. They'd want to win the test. If they don't turn up and play this pink ball practice match, they'd want to win in Brisbane.
Australian fans are still watching clips of Stuart Broad melting down in the commentary box.
A natural reaction for me to just close my eyes and just pray it wasn't actually happening. You know, if I close them, maybe this isn't actually happening.
But they're also mostly watching clips of Travis Head after his innings. You know, it was like a cricketing version of Gravity Defiance. The vibes, they just went higher and higher and higher. And it's created an unusual headache. Do you sense that he's going to open the batting in Brisbane? How can he not?
Well, yeah, 24 hours ago I would have said he has to open. Like, I mean, if this is what this series is going to be, to a certain degree, let's lean into it. Let's open the batting with Travis Head and see what happens. I mean, I feel like he is almost, don't take it the wrong way, he's almost more expendable as an opener than if you were to put Marnus or Steve Smith up there. I feel like if you lose Marnus or Steve Smith out of position, that throws out of kilter the entire Australian batting order. But if you take a punt on Travis Head, I feel like you can kind of make up the difference later down the order. The only wrinkle now, I think, was Matt Renshaw making 100 in the Shield in the day-night match against Victoria yesterday. He is now probably the most in-form opening batter in Australia. But obviously the question is Usman Khawaja, is he fit? Is he in form? If he doesn't play, I think then they have to sort of decide, okay, Do we roll the dice with Travis again, see what happens? Maybe that allows us to fit Bo Webster back into the 11 at five, or probably at six, and Cam Green can bat five. Pretty good balance there, plus the extra bowler. Webster probably would be pretty handy with the pink ball. Or do you go for the genuine opener, Renshaw and Weatherald, keep the rest of the order as it is? You got a little bit more solidity. The one thing we're not talking about is Uzi opening in Brisbane. So I feel like a lot would have to change between now and then for that to be the case.
The early murmurs from Camp Kawaja is that he hopes to be fit to play, or expects to be. The reports of him playing golf 3 days straight leading into a test where he suffered back spasms have not been well received by all. On a scale from not a big deal to awfully big deal, how significant was it that the opener spent so much time on the course pre-test one?
I don't really care what he does in the days before. I can't say with complete confidence that him playing golf for 3 days hurt his back to the point where he wasn't able to bat on the first day or the second day. But it doesn't look good. And it's kind of like the England situation, you know. If the preparation is what it is and then things go badly, it doesn't look good and you leave yourself nowhere to go. Uzi's a very experienced cricketer, very experienced athlete who would know his body better than anyone. So only he will know if he's made mistakes there or not. But you leave the door open to questions and to criticism if those are the choices that you make and if those choices get out. Watching him walk from the field on day two, he looked like a 39-year-old with a busted back. Like, he could barely move when he was trying to walk off. If he's able to get back up again for Brisbane, then that's good. But then I also wonder, how much confidence can you have in it not happening again? Because, you know, back spasms aren't something to play with. They're not normally something that turn up and disappear and then you have no more problems, especially not at Uzi's age. But I think that plus the combination of form, which has been patchy for quite some time now, is really going to put Uzi in a very difficult situation. And the decision might be taken out of his hands, unfortunately, at this point.
In short, finally, the increasing noise around Hazelwood is he won't play potentially for the rest of the series. Pat Cummins continues to race the clock. What's the bowling lineup going to be in Brisbane?
I think Cummins might play. I think that's what he's been aiming for the whole time, and he's been careful not to promise anything. Part of me was thinking perhaps if, you know, Australia had a loss in Perth, I would have thought he probably definitely would have played in Brisbane. There would have been a heightened sense of urgency that perhaps isn't there now. I feel like maybe he plays this one, sits out Adelaide, plays Melbourne. I think, I don't think he's going to play all four from here on out. I think they're going to have to be a little bit careful with him. But yeah, as you say, the noise around Hazelwood is not good. Doesn't sound like he's going to be fit anytime soon. More likely than not to miss the whole series. It's a blow heightened because so many of the reserve fast bowlers in Australia have gone down as well. So we've kind of got Boland, Doggett, Stark, maybe Cummins, and then you're kind of scratching around a little bit, so we can't afford any more. The problem is, unfortunately, I think if Cummins does play, it will probably be Doggett that misses out, which is unfortunate for him because I thought he bowled pretty well on debut, and I think he'd be a handful in a pink test. But yeah, if I was to guess, and it's purely a guess at this stage because there's so much time between matches now, I reckon Pat might get up for this one.
Dean Bilton will be in Brisbane for the second test. You can read his analysis on the ABC Sport website. Dean, thank you.
Thanks, Pat. Cheers, mate.
Headlines. The Las Vegas Grand Prix was Sunday. Max Verstappen won from Lando Norris. Oscar Piastri was fourth, but the McLaren drivers were disqualified after the race, losing all their points. Why? Well, the thickness of the rear skid blocks on both cars was less than the minimum requirement of 9 millimetres. The plank is exactly 10 millimetres thick and will wear over the course of a race when the car bottoms out and the floor hits the track. So the plank can't wear by more than a millimetre. Otherwise, it's seen as too low, too fast. At its worst spots, Norris's plank had worn by 1.12 millimetres, Piastri's by 1.26 millimetres. What does that mean in the title race? It means there are two Grand Prix left. Norris remains first overall. Verstappen and Piastri are both 24 points adrift of the Brit. If Lando Norris finishes in the points next weekend and is in front of those two, he'll secure the world title. The Wallabies' long 2025 is over, and it ended in an entertaining defeat full of discipline issues, which is something of a microcosm for their year, comprehensively beaten ultimately by France. North Melbourne v Brisbane, that's the AFLW Grand Final for 2025. After the Kangaroos edged out the Demons and the Lions, easily accounted for Carlton in the preliminary finals. Live coverage on the ABC Listen app. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to the BBC, Fox Cricket and Sky Sports for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.